Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon, folks. Thanks for joining us for another Saturday of questions and answers, hopefully, here on Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And Mr. Nick Francesco is taking a well-deserved Saturday off with other family things. So without that more said, let's just go right on into the news like he would do.
I can take that first one.
Yeah,
we'll all right, go one. For it.
I know Steve's working on cameras, so we're going to get some video up soon. So I'm going to start with LastPass says it was breached again.
Oops.
Last password manager LastPass said it's investigating a security incident after its systems were compromised for the second time this year. LastPass chief executive Kareem Tuba said in a blog post that a, quote, unauthorized party, end quote, recently gained access to some customers' information stored in a third-party cloud service shared by LastPass and its parent company, GoTo. Tuba said the unauthorized party used information stolen from LastPass's systems in August, which the company disclosed at the time. The third-party cloud service wasn't named, but a 2020 blog post by Amazon Web Services cited the company's transition of a billion customer records to Amazon's cloud. Further assumptions are left as an exercise to the listener. Tuba did not say what specific customer information was taken, but said it was working to, quote, understand the scope of the incident and identify what specific information has been accessed, end quote. GoTo, formerly LogMeIn, which acquired LastPass in 2015, said in a similarly vague statement that it was investigating the incident. It's not clear yet if both LogMeIn and GoTo customers are affected by the breach. LastPass said in August that an unauthorized party, quote, gained access to portions of the LastPass development environment through a single compromised developer account and took portions of source code and some proprietary LastPass technical information, end quote. LastPass said that its system design and controls, quote, prevented the threat actor from accessing any customer data or encrypted password vaults, end quote. Tuba added in the blog post Wednesday that customers' passwords remain safely encrypted. GoTo spokesperson Elizabeth Bassler declined to comment beyond LastPass's blog post. So we have our poll of the week, and our options for this poll of the week are LastPass says it was breached again. Your options include never used it, never will. Oh, geez. I'll start looking for an alternative. Meh. All my passwords are trust no one. Last what now? And other. I don't have the poll up at the moment, so I can't see the
we'll
check that up.
Yeah, encourage folks to please vote in the poll.
And if you have more that you want to discuss, you can go to the Soundbites forums and learn more about what your fellow listeners think.
Can if you were get going to vote, the website? I can't get to the website at the moment.
I'll check.
Well, like
I
say, it seemed to be very sluggish our internet service here, probably due to weather. I mean, there is a high winds warning out there, folks. So.
Yeah, and it's not messing around. You know, I was blowing all over the 90s there. So it's considerable. And when we get the cameras up, you'll see my new windblown look. So, Dave, if you were going to vote, which one of these would you pick? Never used it, never will. Oh, geez, I'll start looking for an alternative.
I use NPass. I have been very pleased with it. The key thing, though, is in which they were bringing out, though, is the data, even though it's there on their servers, it's encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are using, with NPass, good, hard passwords for at least that program, the rest of the passwords inside, you know, all the
programs. Generally safe, yeah.
Yeah, are usually generated from that particular program, like NPass. I let that pick the password. And you can use a slider bar, and I'm sure the others do the same type of thing, how long or short you want it. And it will tell you as you're moving it along, oh, yeah, this is good, average, strong. Stronger, best.
Right.
And the only problem I run into, and as a matter of fact, I ran into this with my bank. I tried to put in a nice 64 character long password.
Right.
Too long.
Comes back and says, yeah, no, that ain't happening. That's too long.
It's too long.
Wait a minute. It's a bank security.
No, that's far too secure. It's even too secure for us. We have no idea what to do with this.
So, I had to trim it down to 32.
So I've done that, and I've found, pasting it in from the Apple tool that I use, that it will truncate based on whatever the length of the field is.
And then you don't know when it truncates.
Yeah. And I have no idea.
That's bad.
So as long as the bank never changes that field length, I can continue to paste in this big, super long string, and it will chop it off at whatever the appropriate point is.
Yeah, but if they...
But, yeah, it could be a problem.
Yeah, so I just... They said... Well, they came back with my bank turnaround and said, oh, no, sorry, you can only have up to 32 characters. I go, well, then I'm going right up to 32. And I threw in all kinds of punctuation because that's the other feature within NPass, and I'm sure the others are all the same. You can mix. You can have upper, lowercase added into it and special characters and numbers. Mix it up. You don't care because the program will automatically fill it in when you go to that particular website.
Right.
Matter of fact, I was telling Steve, there are a few other sites that once in a while I'd go. Well, the prime one, as he saw when I was coming in here, I got a new phone and it copied all my apps over.
Yeah.
Well, I had to reinstall a couple of them.
Okay.
And I forgot the password. I've had the phone for a long time.
Sure.
So I had to call, well, one was for Ford.
Okay.
And I can start my car from the app and, you know.
That's nice when it's cold out.
Yeah.
Warm it up.
But I forgot the password and all that. So now I'm getting in the habit and I've been doing this for the past month.
Are you telling me your Ford said, I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that?
No. No, it just sits there. It says, sorry, activation pending.
Oh.
So I had to call and the girl goes, oh, she walked me through it, got it all set up. I'm good to go now. But again, once I changed all that and wrote down the password, I went right into NPass and updated it. Everything I do as far as passwords is now into NPass. Even the minute little program that you know I may use once in a while. Like another one was the New York EasyPass.
Yes.
I haven't used EasyPass in a heck of a long time.
Well, it's only been around for, what, 20 years?
Yeah. And, well, it automatically takes, you know, if it gets down below a certain amount, $15 goes back into it. Well, it finally did it again, and it's like, wait a minute, I forgot that password there. So that's gotten me in the habit now more and more to do it.
Right.
But the going back to the original...
the issue with LastPass here.
The story, the LastPass, is even though some folks might have hacked into it, even they get to, you know, it's like, all right, they broke into the store, but now all the files
all
there are, you know, totally encrypted. And are you really going to take the time and effort? I think they mainly did it just like back in the old days when folks would sit there and do viruses that would sit there and, oh, put this splash screen just so they could have bragging rights that they did it.
Right, right.
And I think that's why these hackers did this was just to have the bragging rights. Oh, they broke into it. Yeah.
I also think that out of the millions of records of customer data they got, they're going to find people with weak passwords.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So they are going to be able to get into some of this encrypted data because someone chose a weak password.
But the thing of it is, though, is they got to spend the time and effort. And if it's just, you know, Joe Blow.
Yeah, they're not going to do it.
Yeah, who's really going to spend the time and effort to try cracking it, and then what are you going to get out of it?
We don't know who was behind it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the problem. Was it a nation-state actor who would have the resources necessary, or was it just somebody that noticed a Post-it note had a password written on it?
Well, listeners, we do have another story coming up about that later, so be sure to stay tuned. The part that I found interesting was not that they did a brute force attack on just the environment itself. It's that they compromised the environment of a developer and found out that that was the way to get in because that's where a certain amount of confidential pieces of information that you need to access the stores and to talk about how does the application work. You know, you have a lot more information about how does the application do what it does.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's a little more
and it's,
under
it's
the hood.
The weakest link in the chain. You know, you hear a lot of times that, you know, the HVAC system got compromised. And once they were in the building, then they were on the local network and could do whatever they wanted to.
Trying to remember which store it was that was how they did that. I don't remember if it was a home improvement store or if it was some department store that was like that they were able to get in that way. But
I remember one of the big department stores, it was the POS terminal that was infected, and it had access to the network and the internet, so it could make sure your credit card cleared.
Yes.
And that's how they were able to capture all the customer data. It wasn't the store itself that got breached, it was the POS terminals.
Ooh,
amazing.
Nasty.
You guys want to hear that other story that's related?
Yeah, go for it.
So the title on this one is Chrome, Defender, and Firefox 0 days linked to commercial IT firm in Spain. Google researchers said on Wednesday that they have linked a Barcelona, Spain-based IT company to the sale of advanced software frameworks that exploit vulnerabilities in Chrome, Firefox, and Windows Defender. Veriston IT bills itself as a provider of tailor-made information security solutions, including technology for embedded SCADA, which is supervisory control and data acquisition, and Internet of Things integrators, custom security patches for proprietary systems, tools for data delivery, security training, and the development of secure protocols for embedded devices. According to a report from Google's Threat Analysis Group, Veriston sells another product not mentioned on its website, software frameworks that provide everything a customer needs to surreptitiously install malware on devices they want to spy on. Researchers Clement Ling and Benoit Stevens said the exploit frameworks were used in an exploit end-day vulnerabilities, which are those that have been patched recently enough that some targets haven't yet installed them. Evidence suggests, they added, that the frameworks were also used when the vulnerabilities were 0 days. The researchers are disclosing their findings in an attempt to disrupt the market for spyware, which they said is booming and poses a threat to various groups. Quote, Tag's research underscores that the commercial surveillance industry is thriving and expanded significantly in recent years, creating risk for internet users around the globe. Commercial spyware puts advanced surveillance capabilities in the hands of governments who use them to spy on journalists, human rights activists, political opposition, and dissidents. End quote. The researchers went on to catalog the frameworks, which they received from an anonymous source through Google's Chrome bug reporting program. Each one came with instructions and had an archive containing the source code. The frameworks came with names like, Heliconia Noise, Heliconia Soft, and Files. The frameworks contained mature source code capable of deploying exploits for Chrome, Windows Defender, and Firefox, respectively. The frameworks exploited vulnerabilities that Google, Microsoft, and Firefox fixed in 2021 and 2022. Heliconia Noise included both an exploit for Chrome Renderer and an exploit for escaping the Chrome Security Sandbox, which is designed to keep the system, to keep untrusted code contained in a protected environment that can't access sensitive parts of an operating system. So whose browser do you trust? You can give us a call and let us know what you think.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, though, is especially right now with the holidays in full gear. I mean, you're going to get so many. If you thought you got spam mail before or different hits before.
No, this is it.
This year, you know, they're all out. I mean, you're going to get notices that a package is coming and, you know, they need this or this, they got trouble with your bank. And you're going to get a lot of phony stuff, but you've got to be careful, folks. These folks aren't amateurs anymore. I mean, they can put up sites that you would, and legally so, swear on a stack of Bibles that that was the official site because you clicked on that link and it took you to it. And, that looked like my bank. It had all the markings on it and everything else.
And the fake site had the little security padlock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't trust links. You have two hands, go down to the thing called the keyboard and type it in. If you don't know the address, Google it and then take the link from there. Do not trust links. Links will get you in trouble, especially around the holidays right now.
Oh, especially if they're texting them to you now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, by the way, there's a package waiting for you at the depot. Come, you know, respond to this and let us know what's going on. Or, you know, your streaming service's password has expired, or we have a credit card that has expired.
Yeah.
You know, click here to do it.
And yeah, to update your information.
And if you're getting a text message, it seems super convenient. And there are a lot of companies that do.
So the good guys are now starting to have to not send these convenient text messages because you can't trust them.
Right.
And we, they can we tell spoof people, the phone number to make it look like it's coming from your area code.
And we tell people all the time, make sure you're updated, load the update so you're not vulnerable to this new 0 day that somebody just found.
Yeah.
But you have to know the difference between the real update notice and the fake update notice. And that's tricky.
That's tricky.
And we see... you know, Google's threat analysis group, normally when a security research company finds a bug, they tell the publisher of the program to let them fix it.
Yes.
And so now we are starting to see more and more companies are now keeping those bugs and either selling them to other bad guys. And there's kind of what in the industry has been known as software as a service. So you log into Google Docs online, and it's a word processor as a service on a website. It's not an actual program on your computer. And so now there is ransomware as a service.
Right.
That you can hire someone to send ransomware to other people. And they take a small percent. Well, they take a big percentage.
I imagine they would. Yeah.
and send you the money. So we're seeing more of these commercial spyware companies that instead of reporting what they find to get fixed, are now sitting on it and selling them to the bad guys. And it's horrible.
Well, Apple and Google and Amazon and many others have what's called a bug bounty program.
Yeah.
Where they will take the reports of the bug, and when they write a patch for it and they can prove that it's something and you've disclosed it, they call it responsible disclosure. If you tell the original company and let them deal with it, they will pay you a certain amount. But let's say, just for the purposes of discussion, let's say the payment for that was like 10 grand. Like, okay, I'm going to give you 10 grand. I am, you know, the big company. You found a bug in my software. I've proven, that's legit. It was a bug. Okay, we're going to fix this, and then we're going to give you a bounty on this. But if you can sell that for 50 grand or 100 grand elsewhere, why would you mess around for only 10?
Yeah.
If you thought that you wouldn't get caught and you could do that.
Make more money, yeah.
And a lot of companies have started upping their payouts.
Yeah. Right.
Because they're now competing against the bad guys. Yeah. So instead of $10,000 for a juicy, you know, bug that you found, it might be $100,000 or $200,000.
Yeah.
And you can now make a living as a bug finder.
Yes. Right.
And you know, you don't even have to work for a security company. If you're good enough, and so the bounties are out there enough that you can earn yourself a living doing it. In fact, Security Now a couple of weeks ago, they talked about the Army's Defense Security Agency, Attack, Defend, Exploit.
Yes,
is their slogan. They put out a call for new hires. If you wanna test your hacking skills by defending our country, come work for the Army.
I suppose that's sure.
Yeah.
Why not? Good luck. Good luck with that. I mean, there's a whole bunch of. I'm thinking about higher ed these days, where there's digital security and cybersecurity is an entirely new program from since I was in school, and it's a growing need that people are very interested in. And is becoming a booming industry of its own. So it doesn't surprise me.
I just had, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, a bug get into one of my Chromebooks that it kept putting up this warning that I got to update my, it was ads to buy Norton or McAfee or one of these, and it was constantly annoying.
I've gotten a lot of those lately, too. I'm thinking some new virus guy came online.
Well, I wound up just doing a reset on the Chromebook because that's easy to do, you know. But then I also had this old Pentium 3.
Pentium 3?
Yeah.
From when?
Quite a while ago.
I got some old ones that people gave me stuff in there. So, you know, it's just kicking around. You know, it's not a lot of memory in that on it.
No, but
it runs
32
Windows.
Megs?
It runs Windows 7, no problem.
Okay.
But I was getting the same issue there. And I was going through and trying all the different things to get rid of it. Wouldn't work.
Yep.
No?
Would not work.
I
finally, finally said the heck with it, and I put it back to Xubuntu.
Okay.
Because Xubuntu runs great on that little machine.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's only, what was it? I think it's a 250 meg hard drive.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right. That what would I call it? Period correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was an old one, like I say. And like Nick, I hate giving away, but I'm repurposing it and I'm giving it to somebody else that wants to play around with Linux.
Yeah. Sure.
And it's a great little box just to learn Linux. I mean, you don't have to have, you know, one of these gaming computers to do Linux.
For sure. No doubt.
And it's still putting, you know, instead of having it go to a landfill or that, you know, heck with it, and just get it up.
If somebody can learn with it, that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I found on my my Chrome, where I was getting those types of messages, I'm looking, there's no extensions loaded, there's no website. It was the notification setting.
Oh.
So, like, you go to a news site, and it can say, do you want to be notified of news?
Right.
Yep.
And so, some malicious ad on a website I went to set a notification to allow these messages to come through as a notification, not as a pop-up window, so the pop-up blocker won't stop it.
Right.
Not as an ad, so the ad blocker won't stop it. It's a notification.
Ah, something new.
Sneaky, yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I had to look
into
it. Well, like I say, I already wiped it off.
Yeah.
That machine is now off, and the young person is having fun with it.
You refuse to engage.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, it was like no biggie. Wipe off Windows 7. It's full of holes anyways. Swiss cheese has fewer holes than the Windows 7
does. Oh, speaking of OSs and updates, I found, and this is old news by now, but Apple released a knowledge base article where they have officially said we're only going to promote the latest OS for being compatible with security updates. That's the one that they are going to focus on. Anything prior to the latest OS, they will do it on a best effort basis.
Mm.
But
because it always used to be the current and two previous.
Well, they never said that outright, but it was like that was what was typical. But now they've officially put it in a knowledge base article. And this is something that the Mac administration community has sort of known for a while, but never had any first party corroboration to show our higher ups about why we need to update our hardware is so that they can run the latest OS.
Especially since now that Ventura came out, that only goes back to 2017 Macs.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't know if I'd install it on a machine that old, unless you've souped up the RAM and have an SSD.
Yeah. No, the 2017, I think, was when they introduced the T2 security chip.
Yeah.
And I suspect that's one of the things it's looking for, as well as probably a metal compatible video subsystem.
We have a customer brought his 2008 Mac Pro back into the shop
because
he's having email problems with it.
Okay.
Yes, you are.
I imagine you might be.
He's running system 10.11, which is 10 years old, is it? 12 years old, something like that.
Considerable.
And yes, you are. And what we've been able to kind of figure out is it's the HTML email messages.
Okay.
That when you get an ad that has, you know, like flashing banners or colors or stuff, it's really a website that they sent through email.
Oh, fun.
And that HTML is crashing the rendering engine in the mail app because it's so old.
I'm that doesn't surprise me. I would also wonder if the security certificates, if the Mac is not getting the latest security certificates and the what they call it, the CSR, the certificate.
So you can't use Safari anymore because that's too old. So Firefox 78 and Thunderbird 78 are the oldest things he can run, or the newest things.
Yeah,
that he can run on that older computer.
That becomes tricky.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to take a slight break. So if you got to do, like Nick says, a quick bio break, go ahead and do that. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of Steve Ray and Eric Worcester and me here at member-supported Jazz 901.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we're here to take your calls. Don't want to have you guys forget. Pick up the phone. Give us a call, 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I just got a really nice prompt on my Mac. We've talked in the past about you forget your password and then they text you a code.
Right.
Well, that assumes they have your right phone number.
It's true.
And it's in earlier times, when you got a new phone or switched plans or moved, you almost always got a new phone number.
Right.
These days...
With cell phones.
Yeah, you can usually keep your number, but sometimes not. And so we've had a lot of people come into the store and say, I don't have that number anymore. That was three numbers ago. So I just got a prompt on my computer. Is this still your phone number?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I can change it, or I can say, yeah, that is still my phone number.
Amazing.
Cool.
That came in my Apple ID system preference.
Interesting. Okay.
So they're trying to make sure. Yeah, they're trying to make sure that your phone number is accurate. So if you do forget your password, they have the current phone number for you.
But my favorite feature I've seen in the last 2 years is when some company will send you a text message saying, "Is this you?" And they want to prove that it's you, so they send you a code, like a 6 or 8 digit code, and you go to the website where you're supposed to type in the code. And Messages grabs it from your phone and puts it in the little pop-up and said, "Hey, this message just came in with this code. Chances are good this is the one you want."
Sometimes it doesn't without even tell you. You just see, if you're quick, you see the little notice pasted from Messages.
Yes.
All right. Tell you what. Let's go back to the phones.
All right.
Or start with the phones, and we got Mike from Rochester. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I've been doing the. For backups, I've actually been using a program called Beyond Compare.
Okay.
And that tends to take a long time. It's actually a tool that wasn't actually made for backups. I've been backing up to OneDrive, and I've been thinking time to get something a little bit more efficient. Any suggestions?
What's the one that Nick uses?
He uses rsync.
R-Sync.
that might be
for more advanced users.
Yes.
We used to talk about Cobian backup quite a bit.
Yep. Yep.
Cobian?
Yeah. Cobian. Yep.
One of the Cobian, is it?
Yeah, Cobian. Cobian backup.
If you want to backup Cobian to soft. To online services, the one of the backup services that I like, one is called Backblaze. If you want to pay a subscription to a single company, Backblaze is a great service. I'm sure there are several others. If you want to just subscribe to a cloud service and then have several computers back up to it, there's a tool called Cloudberry that will do... backups to cloud services.
Are you PC or Mac? Mike?
I'd like to back up to OneDrive.
Yeah, but I mean, are you PC?
Well, OneDrive is not a backup. It's a sync.
Yeah.
So if you delete something from your main drive or accidentally delete something from your main drive, it's also deleted from OneDrive because it syncs. A backup program is separate. Nick has a website where he talks about a bunch of the different backup programs available for each of the operating systems, and that's at asknick.com/backup.php. Our website seems to be down at the moment, so we can't you can't actually get there.
But
asknick.com/backup.php, and he talks about the cloud backup services and local backup programs as well.
Yeah, there was one I saw on there where you could actually pay a lifetime fee and it would handle the backups.
That sounds like pCloud, which is one that Nick likes, and he's got a referral link on that website too. Most of the cloud backup services charge a monthly fee. It's usually like $5 per computer per month, so it's not that bad. Quite often they will have a discount if you pay a year at a time. But pCloud has one where it's a lifetime subscription where you pay once and you can get whatever storage capacity that is between 500 gigs or 2 terabytes of storage. And yeah. So that's a neat way to do it too.
Does pCloud do incremental backups?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That takes it a lot less longer to.
Right.
To do what I was doing with.
Yeah, because Nick was saying that he has it scheduled, so you know. And we've told folks this, you know, for the longest time, is don't turn your computer off. Just turn the monitor off. If you're going to have it do scans or mm-hmm. backups, have it schedule it for after you go to bed.
Yeah.
And right now at the pCloud website, they're doing 85% off a 10 terabyte plan.
My goodness.
10 terabytes?
Yeah. So if you have, you know, a bunch of computers in your house.
Yeah.
And so the other thing you want to watch in a backup program is that it can maintain old copies, versioning,
yeah, old or
what's the other word to keep all the old stuff?
Archival
backup. Yeah. So it adds the files you've changed to the front of the backup, but then keeps all those old files.
Right.
Because it doesn't know whether you intentionally deleted the file or accidentally deleted the file. Or you deleted it and wanted it back.
Yep.
So I can go back to 3 weeks ago and pull that file
that version that the
customer said they didn't want anymore 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And now they say they do want it.
I actually ran into that for a website I do for amateur radio. One of the pages ended up getting, I think it was accidentally cleaned out.
Yep.
And I ran into that. So it was easier for me to rewrite the page.
Yeah, we had a customer misunderstand what the Google All Mail was and thought it was a duplicate of her mail. So she deleted everything in All Mail.
Yeah, that's a good
and
way to.
Then her inbox
space.
Was gone.
Yeah,
because she deleted all her mail. It didn't quite register with her that it was all mail.
It's confusing.
They should call it something a little different, I think.
But
it is all mail.
They should call it like unfiltered, or you
yeah,
know, if they're calling those.
The one thing, though, Mike, is
untagged.
You should remember, though, is don't worry about backing up programs. Don't waste your time backing up. People do that all the time.
Oh, Microsoft Word. Those are a gig a piece now.
Only things you really want to back up, well, Windows, you know, if you use Google, you get free service to upload your photos to Google Photos. And with each Google account, you get 15 gig of storage free.
And
you can back up your stuff there. So if you've got multiple, say, email accounts, say 2 or 3 gig email accounts under Google, you've got over 45 gig of free space that you can store programs and documents. I mean, documents, you don't want the programs, you only want the documents. And say letters or anything else
photos.
That you've created.
Yeah.
Photos can go to the Google Photos, but it's the documents and everything else that's, you know, a pain in the butt to recreate.
Yeah. And most of the time you can't restore an application anyway. It has to be installed because it puts stuff in the registry or in the preference folder or something like that. So,
and people make the mistake of backing up programs, and it's a waste of space.
Sure.
What I've been doing with Beyond Compare is I was actually doing a mirror operation to OneNote.
Sure.
And that would take just about all night for it to do it.
Yeah.
Between my documents and my pictures and my
that sounds like it's doing a full backup every time.
Yeah. And then by doing a mirror operation, it was only doing what had changed on on the OneDrive, but it still takes an awful long time in order to do it.
Yeah, photos, to me, photos are the most critical.
Yeah.
Any other document or that can, you know, probably be pulled back together and pasted. But once a photo is gone, it's gone. And Steve and I have both been in the situation where we've had to tell folks, because they didn't do the backups, their photos are gone. And, you know, it could be loved ones that are no longer here or moments that you can't recreate because that person's now, you know, 20, 30 years old.
Or you send it off to commercial recovery for a couple $1,000 and hope you can get it back.
There's no guarantee
and,
there.
And Archanda's correcting you, Dave. Google Photos is not free anymore. It's only 15 gigs is free.
Yeah. And don't they do the low resolution version?
Nope, not for free anymore. They canceled that last year.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
interesting.
Interesting.
tried
yeah,
to,
but 15
to,
gig is still
it's
free.
A lot. I have 250 gigs of photos.
Oh, I know.
So I've got mine now. Amazon Prime gives you free photos.
Yeah, same here.
For now. Right. Not videos. So all the videos in my photo library don't go up. But Amazon Prime, if you have Amazon Prime for everything else that Prime does, you also now have Prime Photos and have free photo storage.
But the key thing, like, my bottom line is, you know, whether you're paying for it or not, is back, the critical ones are always the photos, in my estimation.
Yep. No, that's the thing that people care the most about.
Yeah.
You can always have another kid, can't you? Was that the first kid you got 1,000 photos of? The second kid you have 100? Third kid? Yeah, who cares?
All right, but if you know, you had to sit there and choose.
Except you have all three of them at once, right?
Yeah, when you have triplets, you just sneak them all into the same shot. It's just an economy of scale, you could say.
Let me put it to the folks this way. If you had, say, wedding photos, which are very important to the wife.
Yeah, sure.
And
or whoever.
Say a resume. Which one would you rather lose if you've got to pick one?
Yeah, that depends on whether you want to keep
and
the wife.
And sleep with your eyes closed at night. Definitely.
Yeah, Nick has told stories about when he used to work that students would come to him and say, my thesis is on this flash drive. Can you get it back for me? You couldn't pay $5 for another flash drive and have a copy?
Right.
Or put it on the school server because I backed that up myself?
Yes, that's misunderstanding the resources.
Yeah. So, Mike, it's just, you know, find a good service.
Yep. So, asknick.com/backup.php.
Yep.
And he compares a bunch of the programs for all the different operating systems.
Yep. Okie doke.
Thanks a lot.
All right, have a good one.
Yeah, at my house, we've got, on our Macs anyway, we've got all of the Macs have a hard drive connected to them, and we use the built-in Time Machine service. And we've, you know, got several terabytes worth of drive because those are so cheap now. You can get a 4-terabyte drive for $100. That's something you can, you know, put in somebody's stocking and then set it up for them, and it's really nice.
But make sure you set it up for them. We've had customers that have bought hard drives and never set them up.
Oh, yeah.
And then they have a crash. It's, I have this a backup drive.
Right.
Still sealed.
Or it's formatted NTFS, or if it's... there's a whole bunch of different kind of gotchas with that. But the other thing is with Backblaze, man, it's so... I don't know what they do, but it runs so lightly, and it pushes things so nicely up to its cloud that... usually around Black Friday or so, they run some super mega bargain that perhaps they're still doing now. I'll have to check during the break. But it's very convenient. I believe I know they're on the Mac, and I believe they're on the PC as well.
Yep, both.
And they just get out of the way, and they do their thing, and they just send you
I don't know the word for that many commas. That's how many bytes that they've backed up.
Bytes? They couldn't.
So they do say it's exabytes at the end.
Ah, there it is.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
How many powers of 10?
6 000s.
6 commas.
Yeah. A lot of fudging data.
So we're into exabytes of data from them. Yeah. Now, I like the one that that you turned me on to a few years ago in CrashPlan.
Oh, yeah.
That they don't do the personal service anymore.
That's right.
You could put a hard drive at your friend's house, and they could put one at your house, and you have an offsite internet backup for free.
Right.
They stopped doing that. Yeah. They went to the
enterprise stuff.
Enterprise
now.
Only, because that's where the money is.
Right.
All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Fred in Rochester. Go ahead, Fred.
Okay, I got a couple questions. I guess you already know that the Soundbites site is not working.
We are aware.
Yep.
Okay, I was going to vote in the poll, but I can't get in there.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. You can do it on the air. I'll read off the options. You ready?
Get a pen, and we'll mark it down.
Yeah, we'll make some hash marks. I'll put them in front of the webcam here. Low-budget website. And then I'll make a photocopy, and then I'll fax it. No, wait. All right. The poll of the week is LastPass says it was breached. Again, your options are, you have 5 options. Never used it, never will. Oh, geez, I'll start looking for an alternative. Meh, all my passwords are trust no one. Last what now? And other. All right, what would you like to vote?
I guess it would be the first one because I use NPass.
Okay.
So it would probably be the first one.
Got it. All right, I'm putting a hash next to that. We'll put it right there on the camera so everybody can see it. There it is. All right, if anybody else wants to vote while the website's down, give us a call. You can register your vote, and we'll tally up the results and show them at the end of the show.
That backup that Nick had referred to, that rsync.
Yes.
Yes.
I got totally confused looking at that.
You're not the first. I'll tell you that much.
I work mostly from my phone.
Uh-huh.
And I use some Chromebook.
Yes.
And you had said something about Corian?
Cobian.
Cobian.
For Windows.
Oh, okay. Never mind. That won't work for Android.
There are several programs available for Android. One, Google has their own backup program built in that works.
Nice.
The joke about Windows has a pretty good backup program, but the restore sucks.
Yeah.
Doesn't work at all.
But if you want to back up to floppies, you can probably still do it.
Yeah. another one that Nick has on his website is GoodSync, which is free. And there is one called My Backup Pro, which is $5. And again, that's at asknick.com/backup.php. For backup programs for all the different OSs.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. I have pCloud, and it automatically backs up photos, but it doesn't automatically back up other files.
Okay,
you probably have to go into the preferences and tell it what you want backed up.
It doesn't allow me to. I've gone. Clicked on everything I could click on. I went click happy for quite a long time and just went every option, every route, and it was not one for automatically backing up all files. It would do it when I got to a spot where I would make a selection. It would say media photos, whatever. I forget the exact wording, but it indicated only photos. And then on the Google, I have a Google account that's quite a bit older. And I've got 100 gigs free.
Mm-hmm.
So I use that, and my phone is set to automatically back up. But being you know, kind of belt and suspenders guy, I want to see that the stuff is actually there.
Sure.
And I can't read it. You know, when I go to the backup file that's on my Google Drive, I can't read it because it's encrypted.
Right.
I can't be sure that everything is there. I had a problem with Samsung's backup that it wouldn't back up my calendar.
Hmm.
You can go.
It kept saying no data found.
There is on Google's website here. If you go to drive.google.com on the web, you can go to storage and then backups and then view details about a backup. And it will let you see what's in that backup file.
But that's through the website, right?
Right.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. All right, I think that covers it.
And that's a recommendation for everyone. Don't trust your backup program. Try to restore a file.
Oh, definitely.
And make sure that the restore works.
Yeah, I'm afraid to restore a file that might overwrite something. I don't know.
Well, you can always... Here's a good test to do, Fred. What you do is you take a file that you want to, say, restore, and it's on one location on your hard drive. Mm-hmm. Make a copy of it, put it somewhere else, or move it from where it is to someplace else. And then go into your restore program and say restore it. So it should put it where you erased the old one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And most of the time, the restore program will give you the option of restore where it was or pick a new place to restore it to.
Yep. So that way you're not destroying the original that you have on your machine currently, but it's a way of also checking up the backup. And like Steve said, you go ahead and restore it and rename it.
Yep.
You know,
just to make sure the restore is working.
Yeah. So
that story I've told in the past where someone lost their Quicken data file. And so they brought in their stack of 20 CDs.
Oh, boy.
And on every CD was backed up a shortcut to the application. Not even the shortcut to the data file, a shortcut to the application.
Which the application without the data file
is nothing. Yep.
It's pointless.
So he had all of these CDs that he was making backups, but he never tested. Actually, he could have tested it because if you double-click the shortcut on the CD,
it would launch
the app because it could see it, and it would launch the data file because the app knew where the data. So it probably would have worked if he tried it.
Right, and you'd smile and pat yourself on the back and say, good me, good job.
Tried on someone else's computer, it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, but it's true. When the backup file's get encrypted, and you end up with this giant backup file. I know that CrashPlan, when it does its local backups to local drives, you end up with a folder with a giant long name.
And sometimes it compresses it, too, to take up less space.
And it makes it really tough to try and do that. Without the application and without the password you use to encrypt it, it's really tricky to do the testing that you'd really prefer to do.
Right.
And that's where a tool like rsync, believe it or not, starts to make a lot more sense. Rsync is this, for listeners who might not know, rsync is a Unix command that does synchronization of files recursively. And its primary goal back in the 70s and 80s was to copy files from one computer to another in a recursive way, or to copy files from one place to another. And it was very good at being interrupted and then being run again and not starting from the beginning. It would pick up from where it left off and move along. And back in those days, when the connections between computers were very slow, this was a very important feature for saving time. Since then, the underlying components that allow this tool to check two files and determine if they are identical or not has been used in many backup pieces of software. The fundamental functions of it are that it checks the source and the destination, sees that they're the same, skips it, and moves on. But the guts of it are helpful in that the result of it is a mirror copy of the source that is generally freshened to whatever the latest copy of the source looks like. There are a million different ways to configure this tool, and it can be very confusing.
Because there's so many options, it gets confusing.
It's what the Unix graybeards would call feature complete.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is more than feature rich.
No.
Feature
this is it. This is all there is.
That's every feature there possibly could be is in there.
The whole ball wet.
And I'm looking at the pCloud documentation, their help pages, and you should be able to pick any folder you want it to back up. It shouldn't just back up media pictures. So you have to pick which folders to back up first, and then you'll be able to see those in your backup.
Okay. I'll have to go through it again. I'm trying to think that I looked at a lot of that, and it only picked out photos, but...
And so that's probably the automatically picking your photos. There may be a button around that that says manual or more folders or something like that.
Okay. I'll have to look at that again. And is there a YouTube video maybe or something like that?
Probably. Yeah, if you go to YouTube and search for pCloud, it will probably have a bunch of them.
I was going to say, walk me through that rsync.
Oh, rsync too, yeah.
Oh, undoubtedly.
I'll have to search that.
Yep.
All right, guys. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Oh. Yeah, backups. Backups are so important.
Because you can never have enough of them.
No, it's true. And having one in your house that's really fast to write to, it's good.
The 3-2-1 backup methodology.
Why don't we talk about that?
Yeah, so you don't have enough backups. So asknick.com/backup.php. You don't have enough backups.
All right. And
after the break, we'll talk about the 3-2-1 backup plan.
All right, with that, folks, we're going to take a slightly longer break. So if you want to do a little, go grab a beverage or whatever, or take a bio break, please do. Ahead of you is still another hour of sound bites where you can call in at 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, and we will answer your questions with no problem. So go ahead, take that little bio break, and we will be back in just a few minutes to answer your questions here at Member Supported. Yes, folks, that is correct. Member Supported. Thanks to you, folks. Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the second hour of Soundbites here at Jazz 90.1. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And Mr. Nick Francesco, as we've said, folks, has a long and deserved Saturday off. And we're continuing on, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So we were talking about the 3-2-1 backup plan.
Yep.
That you don't have enough backups. So you should have at least three separate backups in two separate places, one of which is off-site.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to have a backup drive next to your computer.
Yes.
If there's a fire, flood, theft, earthquake, your computer and your backup drive are both lost.
Probably.
Well, that's where a good...
Yeah.
Power surge.
You can get... Inexpensive fire boxes.
Well, that's... You have to be a little careful on fire safes, because most fire safes are rated for paper.
Right.
Media. Not disk media and hard drives. You have to get a data-ready fire safe.
Those are more expensive.
They're more expensive.
And they're not as easy to find. You won't find those in your local department store.
Yeah.
Generally.
Here's a hint for you folks. If you're going to do something like that, where would you store?
If you got
a firebox in your house, where would you put it?
I would not put it in the basement because most likely to be flooded.
No, that's where you want it, up on a shelf in the basement.
Yeah, right, on a shelf, maybe.
Yeah, you don't want it on the floor, but if you set it up on a shelf, because this is what I was told by a fireman.
Okay.
And he says, put it on a shelf in the basement, because even, they're waterproof. Most of them, once you seal them, they're waterproof, good, decent ones. And heat rises. So it's not going to get so hot that it's going to melt any of the material inside the hard drive.
There is a company called IO Safe, Input Output Safe, and they make individual fire safe hard drives.
Okay.
So it's a hard drive in a fire safe enclosure with the USB port sticking out the back, or they have NAS versions as well for larger capacity. And videos I've seen of them are pretty cool where they set them on fire for an hour and then douse them in water for a day. And then they tear it apart and the data's perfectly fine on the drive inside the box.
It's an impressive demo.
Yeah.
All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We've got Mark from Greece on the phone. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi, guys. How are you?
I'm well, Mark. What's up?
Backup programs.
Yes.
I'm using one that's... I was using Cobian, but I found it to be a little daunting after a while.
Okay.
I started using a product called F Backup.
Okay.
By Softland. And it is a free and a paid version. The paid version gives you, like, backing up emails and stuff like that. But this backs up data just fine.
So this isn't like F Backup. It's... you want it backed up. Yes.
Okay.
And it's a nice piece of software, like I said. You can pay for it if you want to, but it is free. And I use it 3 times a week. It runs like clockwork.
And they have a professional program called Backup for All that a lot of my customers are using.
Yep. I tried that one before. Then what I do is when I make the backup to my local drive, then I make a backup of that drive to the cloud. I've got 3 local drives.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, I got 3 local drives, and one is in that firebox that you talked about.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of people will get 2 or 3 hard drives because they're so cheap and just rotate them. Maybe take one to work and then one at home. But as someone has pointed out in the past, make sure your work is okay with you bringing hard drives in, and more especially leaving your work with a hard drive.
Right. That makes the security folks a little raise an eyebrow.
Yeah.
I have a hard drive that I have at my brother's house that I back up like once a month.
Yep.
There you go.
That's easy. But like I said, it's a great program, and it's free. And if you want to pay for it, you can. and it's very intuitive and easy to use.
Cool.
Yep.
All right, that's okay. a good tip. Right. Thanks for calling.
All right, guys.
Yep.
Always good to learn about a new app. That was one that I had not heard of before.
Looks like that one is Windows only.
Okay. And
but many of us have Windows using friends.
They've got that's true. They've got a 20% discount on the Pro version right now. This is a great time to look at those services online. So many of them are offering discounts at this time of year. I know that the password manager people and the backup people that are doing those online services are interested in new customers. Sometimes if you're buying it for yourself, it's not a great time of year for that to hit the credit card. But it's a great time to get some savings. If you're going to buy it anyway, you might as well get some percentage off.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We got Bob from Henrietta. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, let me take you off speaker.
Yes, thank you.
Another happy rSync user here.
Okay, tell us.
I basically got the house set up where everything stores all its data files on a file server, which runs Linux, lives in the basement.
Okay.
That is also a Plex server.
Uh-huh.
I have to deal with about 14 terabytes at this time.
My goodness.
Yeah, I haven't found any place online that offers that kind of service at any kind of reasonable cost.
Yeah.
So what I did was I set up a shell script to run a backup, and I put that shell script every other day on a cron tab.
Okay.
Automatic, and it's set up to email me on that same system's internal email system a report. Every time it does it, I get a report that says, this worked or this didn't, and I don't have to worry about it.
That's fantastic. Well, it sounds like you've spent a lot of time making that work just right, and now it's working smoothly.
It is a little bit hands-on. rSync is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
But once you get a good handle on it, it's you get it set up, and it's very good. And the only downside is if I make a mistake and delete something accidentally, I've only got until the next scheduled backup to fix it.
Right.
So, yeah, so again, the difference between a sync and an archival backup. I do see that pCloud says they have an unlimited plan for $20 a month.
Yeah, too rich for my blood.
Yeah, and was it Microsoft when they came out with their OneDrive a few years ago? They said unlimited storage, and too many people took them up on it.
Right.
So then they limit it to 2 terabytes, I think.
Yeah.
That's not going to run on Linux.
Yeah.
Well, I know that there are some cloud providers that have a bulk storage option, and the one I'm thinking of, Backblaze, does have that. They call it their B2 service. It's sort of a take on Amazon's S3 service. The simple storage something. And the B2 service, I think, is half a penny per gig per month, which is, again, with 14 terabytes, that's probably approaching several tens of dollars a month, which may be beyond your budget.
So what I've got is I got a 14 terabyte external hard drive.
Okay.
That I leave connected, but the shell script mounts it at the beginning of the process and then unmounts it when it's done doing the backup. So in the interim, if something goes screwy, the drive is not mounted, so it's not going to get messed up.
Yep.
Ah, which nice. Which manufacturer did you choose for that 14-terabyte hard drive?
Western Digital.
Western Digital. Okay. And is it a single drive, or is it a couple of drives that are patched together in
it
like a RAID 0?
Be several, but I've never cracked a case on it. It's an external USB 3.0.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
I also have a secondary backup, which is a couple of extra internal drives that is a RAID 1 array, mirroring.
Uh-huh.
That's only for the very important stuff, but like movies, TV shows, and everything I record with the Plex server,
right,
that all gets backed up to the external.
That's cool. Yeah, I need to do that with all my DVDs.
I think I've seen 18 terabyte single drives, but they get really expensive at the higher
sure.
capacities. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why, you know, 2/8 is probably a lot cheaper than 1/16.
It could be.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a really slick system that you've put together, and now that it's running smoothly, it's working great. But I imagine you're right. Setting up rSync on your machines and having a Linux server to write them to is not for the faint of heart.
Well, a lot of people are running Linux anyway these days.
That's true. That's true.
So, You just got to learn to get under the hood. That's all. It's nothing fancy.
No, if you're ready to get to the command line and dip your toe in that water, I think there's a lot to learn, and you can learn more in half an hour than you think.
And if you're having trouble, there's even sites on the internet where if you're having trouble getting a shell script to work, you can paste your shell script in there, and it'll tell you where you screwed up.
Ooh, nice. Do you know the name of that by chance?
Yeah, I do. Let me get my computer back out of sleep mode here.
Okay. Yeah, I've wake up. It would help me to have a second pair of eyes at some of my shell scripts.
While he's doing that, I've found at a local big box company with a blue logo.
Yes.
14 terabyte drive for $250.
Okay.
Western Digital single drive.
My goodness.
And Seagate also has one.
I remember installing servers for companies where you didn't have that much space.
Yeah.
And they were $10,000.
Yeah,
I've been playing with computers for 20 or 30 years, and I've never had a Western Digital fail. So,
okay.
You're not getting me off of Western Digital.
Yeah. Anyway, we've had weird. We've had weird issues. Western Digital drives have been great, but the MyBook enclosure, the plastic enclosure, we have those fail all the time.
The bridge.
Cheap Chinese parts.
But you pull it out and put that drive in a better enclosure, it works fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of people that buy Synology units, and they'll wait for sales on these big drives. They'll take them, and they call it shucking.
Yeah.
they take the...
Shuck the case off.
Yeah, it's like shucking your ears of corn in the summertime.
Well, Antec used to make an external enclosure for like a 3.5 internal type drive.
Okay.
I don't know whether they still make them or not. I've got a couple.
We've got some from StarTech that we like.
Yes, those are good.
Anyways, that site is shellcheck.net.
Shellcheck.net. I am going to check that out after the show.
We have been there before because it came up as a purple link. So they when the website comes back on, that might be in our link list.
Well, I will definitely check into that myself. Thank you so much for letting us know.
Well, it's just something interesting. I lost a little bit of data because my old backup system wasn't quite as robust, and I was hospitalized for a couple of weeks this year, and I lost a bit when I wasn't home to maintain it.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
So I think I better come up with something better.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you were able to talk about that with us today.
Well, don't be shy about Linux. It's not that hard to learn. It ain't rocket science.
All right. Thank you so much.
It's not even as hard as dealing with the government.
Definitely that. All right, Bob. You take care, my friend.
All right, bye.
Don't you have a bumper sticker on your car about rocket science?
As a matter of fact, I am a rocket scientist.
Is that what it says?
I have my level one high power certification and can fly rockets up to an eye impulse.
Okay. We'll talk later about what that is.
Yeah, I think the SLS is a triple Z.
So my dad isn't a rocketry, but he was in Florida and able to do it all year round, which was nice. But he would go and do it, and then they'd get lost in like bramble and bushes and things. So I told him, let's put I got him some of those tile dots that you sort of stick on. And we managed to Dremel a nose cone open and duct tape it in there and then launched it. And we were able to make it make its little chirpy sound.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is my dad's old enough where he can't hear that frequency anymore.
So, yep. There's
so
quite
he had to bring a grandchild
screamers
with him and say, all right, do you hear? I've told it to make the chirping. Can you hear it? And they would point it out.
There's the Marco Polo system, which is actually GPS enabled.
Oh, okay.
It's $400, so you got to put it on your big rockets.
Yeah.
And then there's Vicky. She is a real-time data transmitter.
Okay.
And as the rocket is flying, Vicky reads out the altitude.
Oh, you get telemetry?
20,000, 20,000, 30,000, 100,000, 150,000. I just saw one at BlackRock where they got to 298,000 feet.
Okay.
But, they were at 63 miles.
Yeah.
So in space.
So that's technically space.
Well, no, I'm sorry. So
63K?
58 miles. So they were just below the 60-mile, 100-kilometer Kármán line for an amateur rocket launch. And then the GPS comes it down. When the parachute deploys and there's a sudden drop in speed, then she knows parachute has deployed. And and the GPS will guide you right. That's a couple thousand dollars. So those are for your huge, you know, space shots.
Yeah.
But yeah.
After I win the lottery.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phone. We have Rich in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, guys. This is two questions. The first one, when I sign into certain websites, I get a pop-up that says primary password required. What is that all about?
Great question. Tell me, are you running any type of password manager?
Probably, yeah, a LastPass.
Okay. I'm guessing that your password manager wants to do its job, but it needs your permission to do it. It would like to check itself and see if the page that you're going to has a line in its database where it can pull the username and password from, but that password is protected and your keychain, for lack of a better term, isn't unlocked yet. And I imagine that that message is coming from LastPass and asking you to unlock it so that the browser plugin can do its job.
Yeah, it's got to be sitting down in the toolbar, sort of sitting there waiting for you to do different things.
So I should type in my LastPass primary password?
Yep. It's got to be sitting down in the toolbar to be active. So then that way when you go to different websites, it's going to help you automatically fill in those long passwords for you.
And if you haven't entered your primary LastPass password recently, then it wants to make sure it's still you there.
Now, it's possible also that that could be part of... Is your computer running Windows 10?
Yes.
Okay. It's possible that this could also be part of Windows 10. I think Windows 10 itself has a password manager.
Microsoft Edge password manager, yeah.
So I suspect if you're using Microsoft Edge, that it may be part of that as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking primary. Firefox is asking for primary password. It's such a generic term. It generally does relate to your password manager, whichever password manager you're using.
Okay. Number two, a while ago you guys said that there is one way to get your computer to reveal all of your passwords in one fell swoop. What was that?
It depends on which password manager you're running. I know the Google password manager has an export command.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know with Apple's keychain, you can only look at them one at a time.
Yeah. In Safari, I know that you can put in your computer password and then it will reveal things to you.
But only one at a time.
In Safari?
Yeah. Chrome, you got to do the same thing. When you go into settings and look up passwords, it'll show you all your passwords, but to, you know, see the passwords, you've got to click on each one for that particular site.
But I think
that was correct. My question.
Yeah.
That was ultimately my question. There's a whole bunch of dots where the I would hope the password is. I need to reveal each one if I wish to print it, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I think Google Chrome, I'm launching my Chrome now, I think it has an option to export your passwords into a text file.
Oh, okay. And then they would be there revealed.
Probably.
Yeah,
if it's a text file, That does seem kind of risky, but if you choose to export your passwords, then that should be okay.
By risky, you mean if there's eavesdroppers I don't have secure virus protection, somebody could see all those.
Yeah, somebody walks up to your computer, that they can see it.
Yeah,
or you leave it on the printer and forget to grab it.
In LastPass, you can go to the LastPass icon in your browser and then select More Options, then Advanced, then Export. And you can pick what flavor of export file you want. Chances are good that if you want to be able to read them, you want what's called a CSV file, which stands for comma separated values. So you get a website name, a comma, a username, a comma, and then the password. So if you pick
CSV,
that's the one you want. Then you enter in your password to prove that you're somebody who's allowed to do this.
Yep.
And then it will save that file wherever you tell it to save. But be careful because that's a very sensitive file. You definitely don't want that falling into the wrong hands.
Yep. Same thing in Google Chrome. If you go into settings on autofill, there's an export command for your passwords. And then a message pops up and says, your passwords will be visible to anyone who sees this export file.
Right. So if you wanted to print out a copy and put that in your Fire Safe or in wherever you keep your important documents, that would be really nice. And then make sure to delete that file when you're done.
Thank you very much. By the way, where's Nick? Is he okay?
Yeah. Nick is just fine. He's just having a week off.
Good. Okay. Thanks, guys. I love your show, and I have contributed. So
thank you. That's so nice to hear. Have a great day.
Well, that's kind of neat. The CSV file Chrome exports even puts little grid lines on it.
Oh, how pleasant.
Yeah.
Or is that the... That might be preview.
Maybe.
Doing that with the CSV, because I've seen that before. Preview is very nice with CSVs.
Yep. Yeah, it is. And so that's also a good thing about estate planning. We've talked about that for a while.
Yes, I was thinking about that
myself. Yeah, make sure your spouse knows your passwords. Yeah. Online bank accounts, you know, computers, things like that. We're running into that with a family friend where nobody knows any of his accounts because he passed unexpectedly.
Yeah. No, that can be tricky. And it's a very nice gift to give those who are left after you're gone.
One of the things that I got really annoyed about is go to Amazon or, you know, regular stationery stores, you can get an address book, you know, A through Z with the address, you know, like a dollar, maybe two. Yeah. The ones that say password book on the front of it are $10. Because it says passwords on it instead of address.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Ed from Rochester. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, hi, guys. I was talking about backups. I just want to ask you a question. Maybe I didn't know or lazy or whatever. I got a lot of pictures of my vacations on the camera. It's a Coolpix. It's on the memory card, you know, that you get like SanDisk makes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it comes in a little plastic case. And I don't know if it's safe to leave them like that, or the camera's got the capability of putting them on a DVD, which is a kind of a pain in the rear because it's just a hassle. I don't know if they were just safe to be, could be kept in the little plastic cases, or should they be?
Is that the only one of them that you have? Do you have backups?
It's never safe to have one copy because that little card can fail.
It's going to. No, it's not. Can fail. It will fail.
Yeah.
You just want to make sure that your data is elsewhere. So the short answer is, yes, that is a reasonable way to store those things. The data on the card is more valuable than the card itself. And with a small investment, and chances are good when you're buying new cards that they are coming with one of these adapters that you can take the tiny little card in and put the tiny card into a bigger adapter and then use that larger card either in a laptop or in another kind of computer to create a second copy of those pictures and then store the second copy somewhere safe.
Up on the cloud.
A lot of computers will have a card reader. SD cards are the most common type, and then the micro SD cards are really
common
thumbnail size. Yeah.
The regular SD card. Yeah, the micros are a real pain. This is a regular SD card.
Yeah.
Okay.
But back it up to the internet. Somewhere's up on the internet or just off-site storage.
One copy on the card and one copy on your computer. Then you have two copies.
That's a start.
Then have a copy off-site just in case.
Once you get onto your computer, then life gets easier in terms of making nice backups that are easy to get to. You also get the ability to see all of your pictures at once it's on your computer, which is quite pleasant.
On a thumb drive, would that be the same option?
Thumb drive would be okay.
Yeah, but like I say, you want to get it on something that's off-site.
Ideally.
You know, I mean, if you got a Google account, you can use Google Photo and throw it up to there, or, you know, OneDrive.
Amazon Photos gives you now free unlimited photos.
Yeah, I mean, check those other things out because these other devices can and will fail.
So even the DVD would be not a good option, you say?
Well, DVDs are a little more archival. And well, there are specific DVDs designed to be archived, and then there's really cheap DVDs that will fail quickly. The plastic can melt. The way DVDs are written, a laser burns little pits and holes in it, and if the plastic melts, those pits go away. They aren't as permanent as you would think.
And finding DVD drives is becoming more difficult as well.
And the computers don't come with them.
Yeah. So just having a second and possibly even a third copy on some other disk, a flash drive, your computer hard drive, is good safeguards for when that drive will fail.
Can I do it to a Chromebook?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, and a lot of Chromebooks have SD slots built in.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank
you. All right, folks, tell you what, we got to take another short break, but don't go anywhere. And we got some folks on the line, so please hold on the line, and we'll get to you as soon as we come back for this short break right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the last half hour of sound bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
And on the phone we have Joe from Chittawaga. Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
So I can corroborate. There's some sites that I visit in Firefox that all of a sudden I see the pop-up, please enter your primary password.
Hmm.
I always wonder, what the heck are those sites wanting that they want me to decrypt my stuff that I have stored in Firefox? That's really annoying that it doesn't tell you why it wants you to unlock, but just, hey, enter your primary password.
So, yeah, a little context would be appreciated, Firefox, if it wouldn't be too much trouble.
And I can tell you I am a pCloud customer, and
okay.
Unfortunately, I think that person is right, that as far as the Android client goes, all it will do is back up media on your mobile
That could be, yeah.
Device.
I was looking at the Mac version, because that's all it would show me. I couldn't figure out how to get into the Windows or Android versions of the help system.
Right.
Sometimes the websites are too smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, your desktop clients... And incidentally, they do have a Linux desktop client, which was a little bit surprising, that will sync a folder between your local system and pCloud.
Okay.
That does come with a caveat, though. I used to run a program called JAuth. It's basically a Java program that produces those authentication codes that change every 30 seconds.
Yes.
And I wanted to just sync to all my desktop computers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a little too clever. So if you set up sync between JAuth locally and JAuth on pCloud, that's all you get. You go to the second computer, it says, oh, I've already had that. No, you don't. Not on this computer. So I end up, you know, synchronizing the JAuth on pCloud between JAuth dash the computer name. So... Each different computer gets its own synchronization directory, so it does manage to keep in sync that way.
Okay. Oh, that's good
and
to know.
I'll also tell you that the lifetime subscription to that is a very very good idea in theory. I'm one of those oddball people, I guess you'd say, that actually goes and reads the terms of service. And they talk about, yeah, it's non-refundable and all this and that and all that, which makes sense. You don't pay your money and then, you know, 5 years later say, no, I want a refund.
Right.
No. It would be nice if it was prorated. But anyhow, I can't remember. It's either 2 or 3 weeks ago. They changed something.
Okay.
I don't know what. That when I go into their web interface and I go to try and retrieve some of my files, it opens a new tab, and it gives me a 404 error.
Oof.
File not found. Like, oh, boy. Okay. So I write to them. I went back and forth with their tech support. They're still trying to figure this out, like, 3 weeks later.
Yikes.
So what's the downside? Okay, so you pay your money. You can't get any of it back. What economic incentive do they have? Answer is none. To give you good customer service. You can't say, well, I'm downloading all my data and going to a competing service. Like, yeah, we'll get around to it whenever.
Right. Well, I see at the bottom of their webpage that they're in Switzerland, which is interesting, and that they're offering significant savings, 85% off for their Black Friday services. It looks like the 10-terabyte plan for a lifetime service is $890, which sounds like a lot up front, but if you use that for, you know, 10 years... And I imagine it turns out to be a pretty good deal for 10 terabytes.
That's exactly it. When I signed up, they only had the 500 gigabyte and 2 terabyte. I took the 2 terabyte.
Yeah.
You know, I went to myself, okay, they're charging this much for 500. Let's see if I multiply that by 4. wait a minute, it's cheaper to get the 2 terabytes.
So oh, yeah.
Then, oh, when am I ever going to fill 2 terabytes? You know, famous last words. But uh-huh. I figured, well, just spend the extra money. You'll be happier that you're almost never going to run out of space.
Right.
But again, think of the economic incentives to give good customer service. That's the only caveat. And the unfortunate thing is, I found this out because I use KeePass 2, where you get to manage the file that keeps all your secrets. That's the one file that didn't download correctly.
Oof.
Yeah, so immediately go, okay, I do have backups. And if you do use a password manager where you are the one managing the password, oh boy, it's backup and versioning very, very important.
Yes.
Now, this much I'll say. Their desktop client does what's called fuse mount.
Okay.
In Linux. So basically, it mounts it just like you would mount a local hard disk, like you would mount a USB drive or something. And that seems to have no problem as long as you go through, like, their desktop client. It's only when you get into third-party clients like our clone or the website where I started having these issues.
Well, while you were talking about this, I tried to go to their website and look for their support area. And so far, all I've found is a mail-to link at the bottom that just says you can email support@pcloud.com.
Yes, that's the other thing. There's no phone number you can call for support. Email only, not even like, you know, some web form or something. No, it's email only.
I just
found their phone number.
Well, I see a phone number, but it's in Europe, and it's not an 800 number.
Yeah, it's country code 41, and the number is 435085948. So if you want to call Switzerland, and then you'll have to speak Swiss to talk to them.
French, Dutch, or German, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing.
Oh, if Turkish, Chinese, Russian, and Belarus, Bulgarian as well.
Oh, that's good to know.
If you do want to sign up for their service with all those caveats, be sure to pick the region you want. If you're concerned about, exfiltration of your data or something, you can store it in Europe if you want. It's just given the transatlantic, you know, internet, it's going to be a bit slower.
Sure.
When I first signed up, I accidentally picked Europe to store my data.
Right.
And they want some fee, like $20, $50, I forget what it is. They want a fee to move your data from Europe to America.
Oh.
So I just simply canceled my account and signed up with a different email address. And by the way, that different email address was one of those Gmail plus addresses. So instead of like my address at gmail.com, you know, it was my address plus pCloud. Okay, so I canceled that, and I did plus P-Cloud. It was different enough for their system to accept. So it's like, okay, close my account, open another one.
Okay, well, tell you what, we got to keep moving on. Did we answer your question for you?
Yes, you did.
All right,
thanks.
Well, have a good
time,
one.
Gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Well, there was a lot to digest there.
Yeah,
pCloud, interesting service. I don't know. There's enough things there. My data is so important to me that I have to read through their T's and C's before I'm ready to jump on that. I've been so happy with Backblaze that it's not even something I've had to think about for a while.
Yeah, asknick.com/backup.php, and he's got a list of a bunch of different programs available.
Very good.
All right. Tell you what, let's keep moving on here so we can get everybody in. We've got Ron from South Bristol. Can we help you? How can we help you, Ron?
Hey, I just have a quick question. I'm thinking about a used Mac Mini.
Okay.
And I just do, like, spreadsheets, Excel, maybe some web maintenance. And the base model's 8 gigabyte. The upgrade is 16. Is there a big difference between the two with what I'm going to be using it for?
Not especially. The more RAM you have, the more programs you can open at once and the larger documents you can open. So if you were opening really big pictures or video, then having more RAM would be helpful. If you're opening a million cell spreadsheet, more RAM would be good. But if it's only a few hundred cells, then the 8's probably enough.
In general, I wouldn't have a hard time recommending the 8. But if it's a tool that you think you're going to keep for more than a few years, yeah. I think it's worth spending the extra couple hundred bucks to bump up to the 16.
Because although the current Macs, you cannot upgrade the RAM or store, internal storage later. You'd have to use external storage. And that's starting to happen in a lot of PCs, too. They're soldering RAM to the logic boards because that makes it cheaper to produce.
And what are your thoughts on an SSD drive versus a spinning drive?
In general, SSD offers significant advantages in terms of performance. We've seen 5 and 8 and 10 times the performance coming from solid-state drives. It's becoming more difficult to even find computers that have spinning drives. Usually they'll have those as a secondary option because they are cheaper in terms of the unit price for storage. So you'll get more gigs for your dollar with a spinning drive, but the performance is so outweighs that for your primary storage, and again on a Mac Mini, I think it's going to be difficult to find anything with a spinning drive anymore. The spinning drive is kind of a dinosaur that's on its way out. It also consumes a lot more power, which is not as much of a deal on a problem on desktops, but on laptops it helps make the battery last longer when you're using an SSD as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you've answered all my questions. Thanks, gentlemen. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. What's interesting is Apple still makes the Intel based Mac Mini available.
Is that right?
For people who still have very old software that haven't been upgraded for Apple Silicon yet.
Right. And that doesn't run with Rosetta, apparently?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Some of the, we've run into a couple of the higher end plotting programs.
Oh.
That have been around for years, usually connected to the $100,000 plotter that they can't upgrade either.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had some, clients that were architecture firms that still had some ancient HP plotters that they wanted to try and get rolling.
Yep.
And that proved to be challenging.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We got Bill sitting over at Shadow Lake doing some Christmas shopping. So go ahead, Bill.
Hi, I hope I probably got a very easy question for you guys.
Go ahead.
I bought a used laptop that I was told had Windows 10.
Okay.
Turned out it had Windows 8.6.
All right.
And it was wiped. It was wiped. It was right back to square one. And I found out that I have not, I'm too late for the free upgrade to Windows 10.
Okay.
But I would like to upgrade it to Windows 10.
You can still
you guys recommend, pardon me?
Yeah, you
still can.
You go to the Microsoft website and you can download the Windows 10 ISO. So you have to do this on a working computer. You download the ISO and write it to a flash drive, and then you can boot that flash drive on the other computer to install Windows 10. The trick is going to be if the license code in your Windows 8 computer still works, or they're going to want you to pay for the Windows 10 license.
No, my current machine, I wound up wiping it out. And I wound up downloading the ISO and said, no, don't have a number. And it went right ahead and installed. Maybe it gave you the selection, the ISO file, whether you want home, pro, student edition. I mean, it goes through the whole
version.
Thing.
Yeah. Interesting. Well,
and you on the Microsoft website, you pick whether you want the 32-bit version or the 64-bit version. So you got to dig into the hardware specs on that PC to see if it can run 64-bit.
One thing I would suggest, do you have DVD drives in both these machines?
Yes.
Burn it. I had better luck.
Booting. Yeah, sometimes older computers boot from DVD better than from CD or from USB.
Your older machine might not be able to boot from USB, so you might want to burn it to a DVD.
Okay, there is some sort of a drive. I didn't really look too close to see whether it's CD or DVD that does pop out the side of the thing occasionally.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll need to be a DVD because of the size of the Windows installer.
But chances are good any laptop produced in the last 10 years is probably a DVD capable drive.
It's just that the newer machines now, believe it or not, are coming without DVD drives. That's why I asked, because one of them that I just got, Dell box, didn't have it, and trying to load Windows and get it the smarts of the Dell computer just didn't want to boot off that stupid USB. Wanted to go for a DVD that doesn't exist in the thing.
Yeah. And you got to boot to the BIOS and tell it that, oh, yes, there is a USB port available. And then, it can be a couple of hoops to jump through.
Oh, yeah.
But in general, you should be able to get the ISO, which is the disk image file, and write that either to a DVD itself or to a flash drive. And then with your new-to-you computer, you can tell it to start up from either one of those and go through the installer process. It will either identify that you've got Windows 8 installed and let you come along. Microsoft is very interested in getting as many people as possible onto their latest version of their OS. So I don't know for sure if you're going to get tagged to buy a license or if they'll just let you jump in as long as you're upgrading from an existing Microsoft product. But in general, I don't know what those go for anymore. But they'll be sure to let you know during that install process. So, you know, if you're feeling lucky, I think you might be okay.
Download. So I'm really new to this. Mm-hmm. Can I, like, email you guys and maybe you guys could email me the instructions?
We have instructions on our website when it comes back up again to download the Windows 10 disk image and burn it to a...
And matter of fact, the other thing I would highly suggest is there's a number of YouTube videos out there that will walk you through step by step what websites to go, what software to use to create the image. Matter of fact, off the Windows site, it has the software there to burn the image for you.
If you have a working Windows computer now, Microsoft has another link. So if you search for download Windows 10 or Windows 10 ISO, you can download the ISO that you write to a disk. Or if you have a working Windows machine, you can download the Windows Media Creation Tool.
Right.
And then that will create a Windows installer disk for you automatically. So that'd probably be easier for you.
I remember months ago, I remember that term, and I remember doing that.
Yep.
And then the thing went through a whole bunch of steps.
Yeah, it'll download everything for you, and at the very end, it'll ask you to put in a DVD or a USB drive and write the installer files to that drive.
Oh.
That might be a more streamlined way to do it.
Yeah. So if you search for Windows 10 Media Creation Tool, that will take you right to there.
Okay. Well, thanks. I'll give that a try, and thank you so much. Merry Christmas, and I'll let you guys get on to somebody with more important problems.
All right. Thank you for calling.
All problems are
important. Yeah, everybody's problem is important
no
to them.
There's no unimportant problem.
Yeah.
And I did get a message from Nick that he's working on the website.
Oh, very good.
With multiple asterisks and symbols.
Yeah, WordPress can be like that sometimes.
He just loves it to death. I think death is the key word.
I'm confident he's going to be victorious.
Yep.
Beat it into submission.
He has to shake his fist at it a few times.
Yeah. Yeah, have you tried unplugging the internet and plugging it back in again?
Yes. He has to put on his angry eyebrows, just like in Toy Story.
Well, that's why he has no hair on top. Only on the side because he's
Peter Capaldi.
Oh my goodness!
We can pick on him because he's not here.
That's right. He's not here.
Yeah, but he'll be back next week.
Quick, don't let him call in.
I feel a flu coming on.
Oh no!
We probably should mention as we're getting closer to the holidays.
That's true.
That we will not be here on Christmas Eve.
Believe it or not,
but we are currently planning to be here on New Year's Eve.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
That's the plan so far, but I think we might be taking that off too.
Okay.
According to Rob.
So call right away with your questions, is what you're saying. Do it now while you still can.
Well, as we've told
two more weeks before that happens.
Right.
As we've told folks, you know, right along from years, the only time we ever really take off is whether Christmas or New Year's falls on that weekend.
On a Saturday, yeah.
And this year happens to be one of the years that, you know, Christmas Eve is on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure people are going to be far more busier, you know, traveling, getting ready for Christmas, because that's Christmas Eve night. and doing other things, as will we with our families. And it's a time of year that you should be spending time with family. Put the computers down and all that type of stuff and just enjoy the holidays.
That's
and,
right.
You know, be part one with family. I mean, that's sadly...
And take a bunch of pictures.
With the cell phones nowadays, you know, it's sad to see. You know, you go so many places. Instead of people, you know, out to dinner or that type of stuff, sitting around talking, you see everybody face down playing with their phones. Everybody's face down. It's like they've forgotten how to carry on a conversation with the rest of the folks. They don't know what to say. And I see that everywhere. I mean, you can drive along the streets. Where do you see folks going along, you know, out with their heads buried into the phone? Matter of fact, that's one commercial that ticks me off. I think it's for Volkswagen.
Okay.
That the guy's sitting there and he's laughing at his phone real hard. He comes out the apartment door.
Yeah.
And the glass door slams in this other guy's face.
Ouch.
He walks past this person that dropped all these papers.
Doesn't help him.
And doesn't help him. And then he's going across the street against the light.
Mm.
And he gets mad at the people because they stopped at him. And he's going, and he points to his phone. Man, if I had, I'd love to have an air horn and scare the heck out of him.
Oh, man. Speaking of that, I found a guy on YouTube who took his drill, his electric portable drill, and hooked up like four different air horns to it.
Oh,
so
no.
It runs this little compressor on the end of the drill. So you put your big battery pack for your drill in the bottom of it, and you pull the trigger, and it goes. And it's portable; you can take it with you anywhere.
Well, I had that type of horn on my Harley.
Okay,
I took off the standard horn.
Yeah,
and I got this one. I had a lady one time was pulling alongside me and not paying attention. Excuse me. Because she was too busy on her phone.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I came up right alongside and then laid on the horn because she's just about running me off the road.
Right.
All of a sudden, she's throwing the phone off into the passenger seat and making a quick right-hand turn on the street, whether she wanted to go that way or not.
Yeah.
But she didn't want to deal with me and
no.
the air horn. Another time, I was going to make a left-hand turn. And this lady in this van comes right in front of me.
Mm.
And I laid on the air horn again, scared her. She got out. She's in like this, she must have been a nurse or something, apologizing 16 ways from Sunday. Oh, I didn't see you.
Yeah.
You were in my blind spot and all that. And I go, this trike is big enough.
Out the windshield? That's where your blind spot is? Yeah, but giving you the left cross.
I love those air horns. Oh.
Hmm. You know,
you can buy them now. I've seen a number of ads.
I may have to look into this for my son, who recently purchased his first motorcycle.
Oh, yeah. They've got them running right now. Like I say, there's an ad that they show the kids playing around and all this, or people not paying attention. They come up
yes.
along and hit the horn, and it's this new air horn. And they're easy to hook up. You just take off the old one, put the two wires back on,
right,
and it's going.
Hmm.
Because they've got the built-in compressor already
right.
in them.
Right. Maybe yeah. Maybe he'll get one of those for the holidays here.
Yeah.
Just trying to keep him safe, you know?
I think, who was it, Regal? I think Regal was the one that made it for motorcycles. You can get it for different motorcycles.
Yeah.
Because then it'll come with the bracket.
Okay.
To hold it, you know, in place. And it comes with all the extra wiring and tubing. Because on the Regal ones, you've got to have the condenser back underneath the seat. Whereas
okay.
the horn would be out front.
I'll have to find out what the laws are in New York about how loud your horn's allowed to be.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no law. You can hit it. It's where the law is on pipes.
Oh, okay.
On exhaust pipes. They don't like people running straight pipes. When we used to go up to Americade,
uh-huh.
they used to try to get you to, the police would stop there and do stop checks, what
yeah.
they call pipe checks.
Sure.
And they'd want you to rev up your engine. And we go, no. Well, we said to rev it up. No, we don't have to. Is there a reason you're stopping it? Well, yeah, rev up your... No. because any of the guys that were running straight pipes, you know, they were allowed, and you know, rightfully so. I mean, I didn't have to worry; I had standard pipes on the bike. So.
Yeah, my son still got all the stock stuff on it. It sounds fine.
Because one of them was trying to say, "Are they modified?" And I go, "No, they're standard pipes. They're on a trike."
Right. What's the point?
Generally speaking, it's about 110 decibels.
Okay.
But every state is different.
Is that pipes or horns?
Noise.
Noise. Okay.
New York State has no specific limit. It just needs to be suitable and adequate.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd definitely be adequate. Yes. Suitable, that's for a judge to determine,
and
I guess.
Not unnecessarily loud or harsh.
There you go.
So there's the argument in court.
Okay. All right, folks. I want to thank Dennis for coming in and filling in for Nick this week. Appreciate it very much. And we want to thank all you folks that took the time and called in with your questions. But you know what? We're going to do it all over again here next week. Nick will be back. So please, by all means, save your Saturday free from 12 to 2 and join us here on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.